This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, you're looking a little funny tonight. You're kind of blue, you're kind of glowing, you're a little bit translucent. What's going on there?
Well, Chris, I just, you know, as Odo has a liquid form, I have a corporeal form, but I also have a spirit form as well. It's just part of being a prophet. You know, it's hard to explain. I don't really exist in time either, and so, you know, I'd tell you more about it, but your puny human brain, I think I'd just blow it up.
Maybe. So that's why I keep seeing these visions of myself back in the middle of a football game. Back in my university years, right?
Yes, yes. And a lot of times, too, you might actually see people that you knew from your past that aren't actually around, you know, you in Tokyo anymore. You know, you may get a vision of your mom or something in Alabama. It's probably not her. It's probably just me. I can actually become whoever I want as well. So it's pretty handy, actually.
It does sound handy. So you're a prophet, and that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the prophets, and or as Starfleet knows them, as the wormhole aliens. And, you know, it's an interesting element to Deep Space Nine that, of course, feels like it's always there because of the orbs, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. You know, in reality, we saw the prophets an emissary, and we didn't see the prophets anymore in the first season. We didn't see the prophets in the second season. And finally, we get to see them again in the third season in the episode Prophet Motive, and then once in the fourth and fifth season. But yet, they're talked about all the time, and they're a very, very important part of the show. And, you know, Matthew, I think the core question, and it's what comes up in the season one finale in The Hands of the Prophets, is are they gods or are they aliens? What is your take on this? Because I don't think there is any right or wrong answer. They're kind of a bit of both, but what is your take on it?
I think this is one of those questions where I'm not sure how to answer it. I mean, in some ways, they're aliens. And in some ways, you could also consider them gods. I mean, just legitimately, you know. The one thing that I would say that might hold me back from completely saying they're gods is that they don't seem to be omniscient. Right. They don't know everything because they don't understand corporeal nature, which is a really interesting thing. I mean, if you're outside of space and time and you can kind of exist in all time and kind of know all these things, I don't understand how they don't understand what it means to be corporeal. Or maybe they don't necessarily not understand corporeal nature, they just don't understand linear time is really what it is that they're not understanding, which that part makes a little bit more sense. But in some ways, they don't actually seem to create anything either, you know? I mean, we tend to think of gods as being creators, but we don't know either. That's not something that Deep Space Nine ever dives into. You do see this a little bit. It's mentioned in The Hands of the Prophets. Keiko O'Brien kind of throws that idea at Wynn, but they don't really go into it. But it is kind of alluded to the fact that the Bajorans do believe that the prophets did create the universe, is my guess. But there isn't enough, I don't think, for us really to get that answer. And I think that's probably the writer's intention, is that they want you to be able to see all the ways that you could consider these, you know, aliens gods and these gods aliens, and never, you know, the watcher of the show, the viewer, is having to make up their own mind.
Right. Yeah. Which, of course, is typically the point of DS9 in most stories, is to present you with two sides of something that's gray, and then you figure out for yourself which side you fall on. You know, for me, I see them as aliens. They're to me clearly a race that lives outside of our normal space-time. So they don't have a concept of linear time. They have powers that seem magical to us, and yet, as you were saying, they don't seem to have actually created anything. They seem to be ignorant about a number of different subjects by the fact that they have not themselves had that experience, and therefore they don't understand. And that's why they question Sisko very much, an emissary, about what does it mean to live in linear time. If they were gods, you would assume that they would understand all of these things. That they would be omniscient, as you said.
Which creates a bit of an issue when, you know, Sarah comes around, because she's existed in linear time. She's had to enter into linear time. So it also means that the prophets are distinct beings. They're not all, you know, interconnected like some kind of collective. Right. So Sarah's experience doesn't automatically transfer then to the prophets, because that's the only way it would make story sense. And then, of course, that prophet, Sarah, was locked in the orb of the emissary on purpose. And so, therefore, she must not have been able to share her experience. So that's the only way I can make story sense of them not understanding this idea of linear time, because Sarah would have, or at least the prophet that we know of as Sarah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll talk about Sarah a bit more later in the show, because that brings up several interesting points about the prophets. On this topic, one more thing that I would point out is that, you know, to the Bajorans, because of the orbs, because of other events that have clearly happened in their history over the course of 30,000 years from the time that they received the first orb, they have reason amongst themselves in their own culture to believe that these prophets are gods. And, you know, that makes sense to me. I mean, I can look at it through the eyes of the Bajorans, and I can see that, yes, these are supernatural beings to them. And although the Bajorans have been a spacefaring race for a lot longer than humans have, 30,000 years ago in Bajoran culture, obviously they would have been a much more primitive society, and they wouldn't have understood what it meant to go out into space, or what aliens were, or anything. And so they would naturally perceive these events taking place on their world as being something directed by gods. You know, there's this interesting theory, and I don't believe it, but it's an interesting theory here on Earth. Well, there's the ancient astronaut theory, and there's this idea that the Egyptian pharaohs were descended from aliens, that they were, you know, half alien at any rate. There's also the idea that the Greek gods were actually aliens, and that we perceived the stories that were told, the things that happened, can be kind of pieced together. And what we took to be gods were actually just people from space who were much more advanced from us, who came down, who, you know, interbreeded with humans and so forth. And again, I don't believe this stuff myself, but the theory is out there. And that too can kind of parallel the idea of the prophets here, and that they are aliens, but they are perceived by another culture, in this case being the Bajorans, as gods.
One of the things, though, that's really interesting about the prophets is we get the idea that they are eternal. I mean, they've always been, they always will be.
Yeah.
There is not a way to kill one of them because none of them actually die. You know, they don't actually kill the Paw Wraiths. They just lock them in a cave. And so, you know, this is something, too, that we consider in many religions to be something of the nature of a god. Their nature of living outside of time and space, all of these things do give the credibility of them being godlike, at least, especially to us. And, you know, and I think, you know, even the Q were not always like the Q. They actually evolved into that. We don't ever get the idea that the prophets have evolved from anything other than that they've always been like this and they will always be this way. That's a very interesting idea, and that's much more godlike than, say, even something like the Q. So that's another dimension of really kind of laying the foundation for them being more than just some kind of different type of alien and being more godish.
Yeah, yeah. So it's definitely a blurry line here.
Definitely.
And whether that's done intentionally or whether it's done simply, I mean, whether it's done intentionally to convey a message to the viewer or whether it's done intentionally just to make them work as an easy plot device is, you know, I mean, that's up for debate. You mentioned that you can't kill them. We know that they are vulnerable to chroniton radiation. That's how Kai Winn drove the Paw Wraith and the Prophet out of Kira and Jake in The Reckoning, but it doesn't actually kill them, right? It just kind of flushes them out. They seem to have to exile one another, or they just always exist. They can be locked away. They can be exiled to the fire caves and so forth. So there are a lot of parallels here, obviously, to Earth religions and to Christianity as well.
Well, in looking at some of the things, I did some research today, and you know, Ronald Moore said when he would do the AOL chats back in the 90s, he said one of the reasons we don't see the prophets very much is because they need to be used sparingly or they become very pedestrian, he said, which I think is very interesting. And again, really goes to make when they show up on a show, it's going to be important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Michael Piller just talks about on the Deep Space Nine DVDs, just the idea that this idea of having this metaphysical world be really explored by Star Trek for the first time opened up a lot of storytelling ideas for them, to give them something new to do story-wise. And, you know, he even says, you know, Bible stories have been a great storytelling device, and it gave us great themes to explore on the show. And I think Deep Space Nine wasn't afraid then to just allow us to explore another side of life that has been around ever since the beginning of time. There hasn't been a time where human beings have not had a spiritual side, and I think that that is something that can't be denied. And obviously, as we see, even in the 24th century, we'll live on.
Right. Yeah. And that ties into another topic that I wanted to discuss, which is the plot device element of the prophets, you know, using them as a plot device. And the, you know, some people see the prophets as Star Trek's attempt just to introduce religion into Star Trek and convey a religious message of some kind. You know, a lot of fans feel that way about it. And I think that's an oversimplification of what's going on here because, yes, I mean, definitely they are used to tell spiritual stories. And as you said, Michael Piller even mentions Bible stories on the DS9 DVDs in those discussions. But there's a lot more going on there with the prophets than simply the spiritual. You know, they are used to explore what time means to us as individuals, you know, how we cope with events in our lives, how we deal with tragedy, how we let go of things and maybe reconcile events in our lives. And that's what you see a lot in Emissary with Sisko. And that's another way in which they are used as a plot device.
Well, it's one of the things too, and we have talked about this a little bit before, but in Pillar mentioning that idea of kind of biblical stories, Deep Space Nine is kind of rife with biblical motifs kind of flowing through it. And I think it's really interesting that you get that the prophets work through prophecies and prophets in the same way that you have in Scripture very early on. They're given visions, and then at the right time, they conceive a son who's one of them, who shines the light to save his people by giving his own life, and then he returns to the celestial temple, but promises to return.
Right.
Now, you know, this is kind of a motif, though, that has been drawn from the Bible for a very long time because it's such a powerful story. And it's a powerful plot motif then to have that happen. And I know some people don't like it, but it was an interesting thing. You know, Ira Stephen Baer said that on the DVDs as well. The reason that he made Sisko a god at the end was because we already look at Starfleet captains as gods. And right. So it just felt natural at this point to have him go off and be a god, because that's already kind of how we hold up our Starfleet captains. And so it just gave them an interesting motif to be able to really work with and play with. And all of these things add for great storytelling devices. And you know, even if you, and Chris, you're not a man of faith, but you appreciate this show the most. And I think that does wonders for showing just how well they handled this subject without getting really super preachy on people.
Right. Yeah, they didn't get super preachy. Now, the parallels to Christianity and these stories become clearer and clearer as the show goes on, to the point to where it's just completely obvious what they're doing in the seventh season, and the way it all plays out, and with the fire caves and Dukat and Sisko and everything. But it's still, they're telling a story, and it's a familiar story, but you know, you can follow it and you can take what you want from it. It's not preachy in the way that, you know, a lot of TOS is. And I've been watching season one TNG on Blu-ray recently, and there are moments in there too where it is very much, it's very preachy. You can tell in the script writing, and here this is a subject which could have become very, very preachy, but I don't think that it became that. I think that for some viewers it did, because they're looking for it to be that way, and that's what they want to get from it, is that they're being preached to. And if you're looking for it, you could make a case for it. But if you're taking a neutral view of how the storyline of the prophets and Sisko and the spirituality plays out in DS9, I think that the writers did a good job of staying pretty neutral.
And that's one of those things that just adds the complexity of the show and the enjoyment, because you can get lots of different things out of it, and different types of people can get different things out of the show, and I really enjoy that. And it's that those layers upon layers in the show are I think what make it worth watching over and over again. And
definitely another plot device element that the prophets did give the writers was access to a deus ex machina when they needed it. And the biggest point that I think of is when Sisko convinces the prophets to get rid of the Dominion fleet that's coming through, because, I mean, there is no other Star Trek series in which an incredibly large invasion force is coming to destroy our heroes, and in a flash of light, they're gone. And yet they were able to do that in this situation because of the prophets. But at the same time, it didn't necessarily feel like a cheap out or a reset button, because it was tied into the journey of Sisko and the plan that the prophets had for Sisko and for Bajor.
Well, and there's a cost to what happens. You know, Sisko interfering with them in that way costs them later on. So it's not as if he got to press the easy reset button. You know, they actually made that work as the show went on and as the story went on, that this was going to have an effect on Sisko's life. It wasn't going just to be a one-time thing. It's not going to be a big deal. The prophets will take care of it all. No, that this is actually going to revolutionize the path of Sisko's life. I think that that's what keeps it from just being something that you just kind of throw your hands up and go, oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a turning point for Sisko, most certainly. Well, let me ask you another question. Now, the prophets are fond of saying that they are of Bajor. And of course, Sisko is of Bajor. And I don't know, what do you make of that? What do you think they mean when they say that they are of Bajor?
Well, Sisko is of Bajor because he's of the prophets.
That one makes sense.
And he doesn't know that.
Sure.
So for that part, that's what they keep trying to tell him that, and he doesn't understand. But really, yeah, what it means is that he is of them, and he'll find that out later. But the prophets being of Bajor, I think this is where you could pull out that the prophets are the creators of Bajor. That unless they had created this planet, that it would not exist. Unless they had created these people, they would not exist. So that they are of Bajor, which can be problematic since, again, they don't understand corporeal time, linear time, that is. But I think that might be the best reason for saying that, you know, they are the gods of Bajor.
Could it be that they, and again, we said earlier that there's no evidence that they evolved into their current form, the way that we know that the Q evolved to be the way they are. But I don't know, speculating, could it be that they originated from Bajor and they evolved into what they are now, and therefore they are of Bajor, and perhaps they either created the Bajorans, which of course, as we know from the TNG episode, The Chase, there's the claim that all the humanoid races in the galaxy were seeded from one first race, which was also corporeal and biological and humanoid, but just speculating here. Or maybe the Bajorans, maybe that predated all of that seeding that went on. Who knows? But these wormhole aliens who originated on Bajor and evolved into this form now feel the need to protect the humanoids who live on this planet now.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And I think that this is one of the things that the writers kind of leave open to your imagination and kind of let you run wild with them. And that's, I like that. You know, I like that they didn't explain everything about the prophets. You know, I was reading some more of those AOL chats, and Moore had said that they had thought about doing things with the prophets, you know, kind of their background, but they never really got to that on the show. And, you know, they get to the background of the prophets with Sarah and that kind of background, but we don't really get a history of the prophets and how all this kind of came to be. And I like that ambiguity, because, you know, if you just explain everything too much, it kind of takes away their specialness.
Well, it does. And I mean, a good example of that in Star Trek is the Borg. And the quote from Moore that you mentioned earlier about how you have to use them sparingly or they'll become too pedestrian. You know, the Borg were a much more interesting threat on The Next Generation, and Q-Who and The Best of Both Worlds when we didn't really know anything about them. They were just this collective that was going to destroy us, and they were ambiguous. And then as time went on and they started giving us more and more information about the Borg became very, very pedestrian. And it started on TNG with Descent. Well, you might even say it started with iBorg, but it started with Descent, especially the two-parter where you have Lore leading this group of Borg. And so I'm glad here that they didn't give us a lot of background about the prophets. I do think they work better when they are this kind of mystical alien race that we don't really know anything about, and then we can leave it to ourselves to speculate on it.
Yeah, I definitely think on that, you know, after first contact, that's the most I needed to know. You know, after that, I didn't need any more. And then, of course, Voyager takes over and we get too much. But I think that this is exactly what Deep Space Nine needed to do with the prophets, is keep them shrouded in mystery and let us kind of let our imaginations run wild at this point. And just enjoy being able to watch the show and be able to think about these things. I mean, you know, you do over-explain everything, and then you don't have anything left to think about. And so this is more fun.
Talking about them feeling the need to protect the Bajorans or guide them somehow, I did find the prophets to be interesting in that it's not the only time in Star Trek that we see something like this. In The Next Generation, Injustice, the Edo have some sort of caretaker that orbits their planet.
Is he a pervy caretaker? Is that what he makes him dress like that?
He might be a pervy. I think he likes to run a lot anyway.
Apparently. Talk about too much junk.
Oh, man. I just saw Justice on Blu-ray the other day, and I was like, what were they thinking? The costume designers.
Gene Roddenberry.
Well, remembering that episode aired in 1987, and I remember all the uproar about the decontamination rubdown on Enterprise and the underwear scene and all that. And I'm like, you guys, you know Justice exists, right? You've seen Justice?
Right. They're wearing way less clothes.
Not only are they wearing way less clothes, they're like on top of each other through the whole episode. I mean, this was not new. This kind of sexuality was not new in Star Trek at all. But anyway, there is that some sort of overseer or caretaker or protector there for the Edo. And then on Voyager, in the pilot caretaker, there is the caretaker array that fills the need to take care of the Okampa. Now, the caretaker in Voyager has a reason, like a very clearly stated reason why he feels the need to take care of the Okampa. The Edo, I think, is more vague. And then here on DS9, we truly do get the vagueness. There's some similarity for me here, very different kinds of beings. But this is a theme that reappears from time to time in Star Trek.
And you know what's interesting about this, too, is that it seems like it takes the 24th century for these kind of beings to actually be interested in, you know, corporeal humanoids. And TOS, right. You know, they would just come around and they'd be like, oh, you're kind of interesting, but yeah, we don't want to mess with you because you're not as high as we are on the intellectual food chain, so we'll see you around in a couple billion years. You're kind of, you're just not worth it. You know, these aliens or gods all stick around to, you know, further their people. And I think that's just an interesting idea and I think part of that is the TOS idea that we're going to evolve and basically we're going to become our own gods.
Yeah.
By the 24th century and here in the 80s and 90s, it almost seems like that's not where we see ourselves necessarily going. They're making some kind of statement there, and it's a big difference between the two. And I'm not sure what that is, but it's definitely something for us to think about.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. But I do have to ask you, Matthew, now, if you have no concept of linear time, are you really sticking around? You're just kind of there, right?
And I think that this is something that they also don't answer is what is prophet society like? You know, what's it like to be a prophet if you exist out of time and you are all kind of separate beings? What does that all look like? And that is something they never, yeah, ever try to explore or explain to us.
Right.
And that's one of those things that it's so high above our thought process to even think about in the end. It kind of makes our brains want to explode. I mean, you start processing that idea and you're like,
yeah,
okay, I have to stop or I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to need a spatula.
Yeah, and it's different from the Q because the Q, you can see similarities in the Q and the prophets in terms of their, you know, powers and things they can do. And the Q can jump to any point in time that they want. But the Q also clearly, they experience the passage of time, however. Because if you go to Death Wish on Voyager, you know, that Q, he's tired of it. And there's that conflict within Q society. Like they feel they've stagnated. And of course, you couldn't feel that you've stagnated unless you are experiencing the passage of linear time. So that is something that is uniquely different here for them as well.
Yeah, and it really, it sets, again, the prophets apart from anything else that we've seen. And I just really like the way that's done. And again, it just raises so many more questions than they ever try to answer.
So let's talk about one division within the prophets. And that's the fact that we have prophets and we have pa-wraiths. And so as we talk about the fact that earlier that you can't kill a prophet, when someone commits evil acts within this prophet's society, which we really don't know much about, they exile them. And we've seen them exile prophets to the fire caves. We've seen them lock them in the stone tablets. And these beings who have been exiled, these individuals who have been exiled, we refer to as the pa-wraiths. Now, I wanted to ask you specifically, Matthew, because so much of this does parallel the stories in Christianity and other stories that have been passed through human cultures. What does the distinction between the prophets and the pa-wraiths mean to you when you watch Deep Space Nine?
Well, honestly, just having read Paradise Lost, this is what I get from the pa-wraiths and the prophets, is that sometime in eons past, there has been this kind of Paradise Lost for the prophets. This idea that certain prophets committed evil acts and they were exiled out of the celestial temple and cast into the fire caves, which I'm not sure how you could get any more Christian than that. That,
right,
you know, exactly. Angels rebel and they're thrown into hell, and that's where we get demons from, and they're, you know, actively trying to work against God and his angels, and so this is very much a parallel there. And that's what I get from this when I watch it, because that's what they're doing with these characters. It's undeniable. In the same time, you know, the prophets aren't God as in a Christian God, and the pa-wraiths aren't specifically the devil, because they're not all the same, you know, but the pa-wraiths definitely have a vendetta against the prophets. And I think that this is one of the things too, why they're so willing to try and lead Bajorans astray. And they're not of Bajor. I really think that if the pa-wraiths had their way, they would actually try to destroy Bajor. not, you know, have people actually love them. So that, I think that's what's really interesting here. And it, you can see why they would take over somebody like Gul Dukat, whose hatred for the Bajoran people is so legendary, and that their goal would be then to destroy Bajor and the Bajorans as a way to get back at the prophets. And so, yeah, it just makes for a great struggle, because, two, you're taking that whole idea of kind of like this good and evil and putting it in a whole metaphysical realm as well. And so the battle for good and evil, especially at the end of Deep Space Nine, happens, you know, in Cardassian space at Cardassia Prime between the Allies and the Axis, basically. But then you get back to Deep Space Nine and Sisko leaves, and the story becomes a spiritual battle, this kind of metaphysical battle. And so it's happening on a couple of different levels. And, you know, that's just good storytelling to me. And I think it made it a little bit more exciting. There was a lot more at stake. You know, we're not just talking about our universe and the way we know it. We're talking about a universe that is far beyond us. And I also think what's so interesting about these prophets and the Pa Wraiths is that if they are outside of all time and all space, that means they exist in every single universe at every single time, anywhere. Mm-hmm. So all those multiple universes, this is something that Olivia Woods brings up in her novels a little bit, and it's that idea is, there's to them, multiple universes don't mean anything. So I think that's really interesting as well. So yeah, all of that together, this just kind of starts to blow your mind the more you keep thinking about it. And so that's what I get out of this whole idea of the Pa Wraiths, the prophets and their battle. And two, I kind of like the fact that there's good and there's evil. You know, there's a set good and there's a set evil, and the prophets are the good guys and the Pa Wraiths are the bad guys. And I know a lot of people hate that idea. They really hate this kind of like white versus black kind of idea that there is a white, there's a black, there's a good, there's an evil. But I don't, because I believe in the end there is a good and there is an evil. And I think it's denial is the greatest destruction.
Mm-hmm. At least in the way they portray it here, though, for a lot of the time anyway, you are able to see that the side that we consider the evil side, it's not evil to the people on that side. You know, they see a certain purpose, a certain goal and a reason behind what they're doing. And then as you get to the very end of the series, it becomes very black and white. And I know that's some of the complaints that people have about Gul Dukat late in the series. And again, they've said in the writing that it was an intentional course correction for the character, basically, that they turned Gul Dukat into a rather two-dimensional a black and white character. You know, he represented evil towards the end. And he wasn't like that through the whole series, but as they got to this battle that we've been talking about, the end of the series between good and evil, between Sisko as the emissary of the prophets and Dukat, who is representing the Pa Wraiths at this point, in order to make that work the way they wanted to, they kind of had to make it black and white towards the end. But thankfully, it's not black and white throughout the entire series. I don't have a problem with it in terms of how they tell the story here. I do kind of have a problem with a black and white view of the world in general, though, which I don't think is how reality really works. But I think you agree with me on that too, generally speaking, which is why we love Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a lot of gray in the world and in the universe, and just in general. You know, for me, though, when it comes down to it, I do believe there's a good and there's an evil, and I believe they're battling, and there's an ultimate good, there's an ultimate evil, and they're going to come to a head. But that's definitely a worldview difference. Yeah. And so, but that's one of the things that, you know, again, here Deep Space Nine is doing, is it's allowing those two to coexist. And yet what I love about it is, for me, is that it shows that what I believe is valid, you know, through Cisco and his experience in the fire caves, all of that really, you know, validates my worldview. And I appreciate that without making me, I think, feel silly for doing so, which so right. much of Star Trek had done before.
Yeah. Well, let's come back to one last point today as we discuss this. And at the beginning of the discussion, I mentioned that we would come back to Sarah. And I did want to talk about Sarah in the sense of it's like with Odo, with the changelings. The changelings, they sent many young changelings out into the galaxy so that they could learn about the solids. And, you know, that's how Odo ended up being found in the Denorius belt. And it's kind of like that here, maybe, I don't know. I mean, we really don't have any explanation as to why Sarah went to Earth and why Sarah conceived Benjamin Sisko, other than the obvious parallel of, you know, she's conceiving the savior of the Bajoran people. But I mean, that's one kind of obvious element to this whole story that we talk about, Sisko's journey and how he parallels Moses in a way, how he parallels Jesus in a way. You can see that here. But thinking of it from the prophet's perspective, what have you given it any thought? I mean, what is the purpose of sending someone out? And we talked about how they're individuals. They're not a group collective the way the changelings are. So this one individual, Sarah, or anyone else they send out, would have to come back and then try to teach the other prophets about what they've learned. Or was it just this specific plan to bring Sisko, to have Sisko be born and to bring him to Bajor? Is that all there is to it?
I think, at least from what we get from Deep Space Nine and the storyline that happens there, I think it's just that they know that this specific plan needs to be in place for Bajor to be safe. Because that's all we get from the show. Because if you begin to kind of ask all the other questions, it starts to really kind of fall apart a little bit and not make sense. The only thing that does make sense then, at least just story-wise, is to say they know, because they're non-linear beings, what's going to happen to Bajor. So they know that they will have to have some kind of being that can be their emissary, that could, but also be their actor on the stage in that way, which is going to be corporeal. They might not understand linear time, but they do seem to understand that there is a certain point at which that being needs to enter into existence. And so, yeah, that's a really tough thing.
And they choose Earth just because the people writing the show are humans, I guess.
you can't really think about why, right? I think that they choose Earth, though, if you look at the series itself, they choose Sisko and they choose Earth because they want the Bajorans to have an outsider. It seems almost as if they're trying to teach the Bajoran something there.
But they could have chosen Vulcan. They could have chosen Andoria. They could have chosen
I think, though, it's because humans have enough of the sensibilities and are close enough to Bajorans and yet different. I mean, on a whole, Bajorans are very much like humans. They just happen to hold on to their faith, whereas humans don't. So I think all of that, the prophets were used on purpose. We're similar, and yet we're very different. And
which would imply that the prophets had been observing humans for a long time, right?
Yes, and I mean, which isn't necessarily hard to do if you are outside of space and time, and you could be anywhere, anytime you want. And, you know, I mean, you've got plenty of time to just observe whatever you'd like. And so, yeah, those are all fantastic questions, and I don't know if the show really helps us answer many of them.
That's why there's that great scene with the prophets where they go, time, time, time. We have plenty of time.
Exactly. Yeah, that was their answer to Counselor Troy. They had plenty of time to talk about time because all they had was time. So
they're probably listening to this show right now.
Yeah, exactly. They already know how it ends. But yeah, I think too, this is the point of the story where the correlations between, you know, Christian scripture and the story of Jesus really come into play, and that,
yeah.
That's why it makes sense. When you start to ask too many questions, unfortunately, we don't have enough answers from the show to really kind of get into, okay, well, so Sarah, and did they really understand, if they don't understand linear time, how does Sarah know when to enter into the right time? You know, I mean, all those questions are really difficult.
Asking those questions, does it make you a spirituality nerd? Is it the spiritual equivalent of asking, you know, how do photon torpedoes actually work? Or how do you create a warp field and such?
You know, maybe. I mean, I do have a master's degree from a seminary, so I guess one might call me a spirituality, you know, geek. And so I don't like to use the term nerd. It's just so pedestrian. I think this is something that's just interesting to think about. And,
it is.
What's nice about all of this, and to kind of wrap up, I'd say what's nice about the prophets themselves is they add a layer of spirituality to Star Trek that it hadn't had before. And I think that it was something that was missing from Star Trek. It's such a huge part of our lives now. I don't think that it's going to be something that if we lived to the 24th century, if this Earth still exists, then I think it's something that'll still exist. And if we ever did find, I think, other beings out there, I think that they might have the same kind of spiritual sense as well.
Well, I think they would, yeah.
And so I think it's important for Star Trek to deal with it. Again, as I've said many times, I'm very appreciative to the way that Star Trek did this with, I think, the ultimate class, and really handling this subject well and being able to have you be on either side of the issue and feel vindicated in some ways by the show. And I just really appreciate that. It's handled superbly.
Yeah, I think whichever side of the issue you're on, you can walk away feeling vindicated in your views. And it teaches you to see from the other side as well. And I do think that Star Trek, I think Deep Space Nine handled this very, very well. I understand why it's lacking in Star Trek in other series, especially in TOS and TNG. But, you know, I also see Star Trek as an exploration of the human condition. And it's a vehicle for social commentary and for exploring who we are and what life is all about. And the reality is that the spiritual elements that the prophets represent are part of life. And without it, I think Star Trek isn't able to fully explore issues the way that the show is designed to. And so I think they were very smart to include this as an element. And they did a good job, again, of using it sparingly and making it a thread that runs through the show. It does build to the climax, but it's just one of many, many different layers that are happening on the show. And so it never overpowers what's going on in terms of the exploration or the relationships of the characters or Starfleet's political agendas or the conflicts between the different powers within the Alpha Quadrant. There are so many things going on, and this is just another texture here. Well, Matthew, it's been really fun talking to you about the prophets today. This is a great topic. But let's tell everyone where to find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on the prophets or the spiritual elements of Deep Space Nine. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to Matthew and me. Or if you want to have a discussion, you can go over to our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section for the orb, there's one for Deep Space Nine, and you can join in the threads that are already there, or start your own, talk to us, talk to other listeners, and explore all the great issues of Deep Space Nine. You'll also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and on Twitter under username trekfm. Matthew, what if people would like to look you up personally?
Well, if you'd like to find me, you could find me at mattrushing02. And tweeting about all sorts of things. So give me a follow. Let me know you're following me with an at reply, and we'll talk about whatever is on your mind at that point. Whether it's here talking about spirituality, the prophets, Deep Space Nine, of course. Also, Chris, doing literary treks with you every week, talking about books and comics, the Star Trek literary universe. Really enjoy that. So if you like any of those things, please join us there. Chris, now if somebody wants to find you, maybe get your thoughts on the prophets or any of those kind of things, where could we follow you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And as Matthew said, if you follow me, send me an at reply so I know you followed. I do love to chat on Twitter. I don't always notice when people follow. I'm not one of those people that tracks, who's following me and who's unfollowing me and such. But I would love to chat with you. So give me a follow and send me an at reply and say hello. And Matthew mentioned literary treks. We have already done the first two books in the Deep Space Nine relaunch, Avatar, books 1 and 2. And very soon we're going to be getting to the third book, Abyss. So if you're interested in the continuing story of DS9, do join us over there on Literary Treks, and you can go to trek.fm/LT. That'll get you there. You'll find us on iTunes, in Stitcher, and all around. And also, speaking of iTunes, thank you to everyone who has given us a rating or a review of The Orb. And, if you haven't done it yet and you love the show, please drop by, give us a rating, leave us a written review. We love to hear from you, and it also helps other people find the show as well.
Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.